In his newest book, Tame Your Thoughts, best-selling author and pastor Max Lucado explores three thought management tools and then applies them to our most common thought problems: anxiety, guilt, rejection, and others. If you search thought management on the internet, you'll find a Pacific Ocean of answers: magazine articles, TED Talks, podcasts, blogs, and books. They explore meditation and medication and transcranial magnetic stimulation. Better your brain by running more, eating more and right, sleeping longer, taking supplements, and so forth. On and on, there's a lot to wade through. But Max offers a three-point training manual, Tame Your Thoughts Toolkit, that he knows well and he knows will work well. Call them what you wish. You know, Thought Management 101, your mental toolkit, mental floss. However you tag them, they make a difference, a huge difference. First, to practice picky thinking, to guard your thoughts. And we looked at that last week. Today, number two is to identify UFOs. An untruth creates a false narrative that leads to an overreaction. And we'll look at that today. And third, uproot and replant. And we'll check that out next week to weed out your most unhealthy thought patterns and replace them with divine truth. These tools will empower us to think clearly and rightly. Sometimes all three are needed, or at other times just one or two will suffice. And either way, these tools will rescue you and me from the quicksand of ungovernable thoughts. The weather may tell you what to wear, but you and only you tell yourself what to think about the weather. Mind management is God's gift to you, but the gift means nothing until you use it. We all nod in agreement with the maxim, you can't help a person who doesn't want to be helped. No number of pep talks or lectures will change them. No matter how many times straight-talking friends will tell them that they are a real pain, nothing is going to happen until they decide, really decide, to change. And the moment you and I choose to change, actually, change begins to happen. And the moment you and I act, the benefits of that action commence. As one professor of neurology wrote, the mere act of making an effort can do wonders. Clinically depressed people feel significantly better simply by scheduling a first appointment to see a therapist. It means they've recognized that there's a problem. It means they've fought their way up through the psychomotor quagmire to actually do something. It means they've turned the corner. And our Maker wants us, wired us, in such a way that healing happens when we seek it. And this is a good time to ask, do you want it? We will discover how to interrupt self-sabotage and self-doubts, to let go of anxiety and tap into God's peace, to snap the spiderweb strands of unpleasant impulses and disarm negative thoughts before they explode, defuse guilt, embrace grace, break free of self-critical thought loops and doubt. Relish the energizing truth of God's love. In short, we'll learn how to tame our thoughts. And no matter who you are, no matter what you've done, no matter if you're filthy rich or dirt poor, no matter if you're in therapy or incarcerated or in a penthouse, married or single, old or young, with God as our helper, we discover a new way of thinking. And that's embedded in Scripture. Romans 12:2. The idea is, do not be conformed to the world, but be ye transformed by the renewal of your mind. The house was everything the young couple would want. Eric and Megan loved it from the moment they first saw it. It was a brick one story that sat on a large lot, and it was built in the 1970s, and its ranch style layout could be updated in a classic modern look. The design was right. The price was right. The timing was right. So the couple were 5 years into marriage, 3 years into their Chicago life. Both attended college in the area, and both were happy to make their home in a nearby suburb. And so they bought the house, designed a plan, and set about the task of tearing it down the walls and ripping up the floors. And everything was great until it wasn't. Soon after the remodel project began, Eric and Megan began to ache. Their joints ached, their heads ached, their muscles ached. And barely into their 30s, they really felt like they were more in their 80s. What they didn't know then, but know now all too well, is that the house was filled with mold. And every time a wall was opened or paneling was removed, countless particles of mold were released into the air and ultimately into their lungs, and they were inhaling toxins. Mold led to Lyme disease, and Lyme disease led to weeks of pain and misery. They moved out. Any chance you're doing the same thing? Not inhaling mold, but contemplating toxic, crippling, or disabling thoughts. Your issue isn't inside the walls of your house, but inside the world of your ponderings. Thoughts like mold particles are unseen. And thoughts like mold can be stirred up and ingested. And thoughts like mold can mess up with your life. Hence, scriptures like this one appear in your Bible, Mark 12:30. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your mind, and with all your strength. Max comments, health happens when the mind is managed. We manage everything else, right? Weight, money, hair, time. How about thoughts? No small task, considering we have some 70,000 of them a day. How many of these thoughts are positive? How many are negative? Brace yourself for the answer. According to Cleveland Clinic's wellness program, 80%, 8 out of 10 of our thoughts are negative. Gloom outpasses happiness at a ratio of 5 to 1. In other words, you beat yourself up 5 times for every time you pat yourself once on the back. Say it ain't so. Are we truly so gloomy? The society of Eeyore. Max says, I refuse to believe it. Maybe the researchers canvassed fans of a football team after a total losing season. Perhaps the survey took place in the dead of winter up in the Arctic Circle. Let's cut ourselves some slack. Say that 99% of our thoughts are neutral, while 1%, 700, impact our lives. And of these 700, half are pleasant, half are harmful. And even in my optimistic, unscientific assessment, we still inhale mental mold 365 times a day. No wonder the Apostle Paul wanted us to guard the entryways to our minds. He urged us in Ephesians 6:11, take your stand against the devil's schemes. Satan connives and plans, deploys tactics. He has a strategy, and that's a cause for concern. However, he is predictable, and that's a reason for hope. For the devil, while potent, is a rotten chess player, and he signals his moves in advance, and he runs the same play over and over and over. And since we know it, we can defend against it. Do you desire to know Satan's schemes for your mind? So let's just remember those three letters, UFO. Not the UFOs of outer space, but the UFOs of thoughts. The U in UFOs. Satan always starts with an untruth. It might be a blatant lie, or simply an inaccurate assumption. Either way, it's untrue. Max confesses, one of my earlier encounters with an untruth had to do with a fellow fourth grader named James. He was everything I was not. Everybody in the class liked James. The girls liked James. He had wavy hair that he liked to comb and style. The guys liked James. He told jokes and played tricks, and he outran everybody in his sleek Puma baseball shoes. James was cool. James had a clique, an entourage of guys and girls who followed him everywhere. They ate and played and hung out together. Most Mondays, they could be overheard discussing an awesome party, and every school has a pecking order, and in our hours, James was perched on top in the fourth grade. And Max? Oh, Max didn't have wavy hair. Max didn't run fast. Max didn't own Puma baseball shoes. Max didn't make the guys laugh or the girls swoon. So Max was not a part of James's clan. So I had to conclude, Max is not cool. Max is an outsider, a commoner. Max is not on the same level as James. Call it a lie or a false assumption. And for the sake of the acronym that he is showing us, call it an untruth. Satan traffics in untruths. If untruth is fentanyl, he's the dealer. Do you remember his words in Genesis chapter 3, 1 through 5? His words to Eve. He created doubt in her mind by asking, did God really say you must not eat from any tree in the garden? The woman said to the serpent, we may eat fruit from the trees in the garden, but God did say you must not eat fruit from the tree that is in the middle of the garden. You must not touch it or you will die. Oh, you will certainly not die, the serpent said to the woman. For God knows that when you eat from the fruit, in your eyes will be open, and you will become like God, knowing good from evil. Liar, liar, pants on fire. Remember that? Satan's greatest weapon is his arsenal of untruths. He deposits seeds that result in weeds. You remember the 9-year-old version of Max, the boy who was outside James's circle? Here's how I coped. I treated my trauma with self-pity. No one likes me. No one cares about me. And I found myself in a rut. A rut, incidentally, is a medical term. Neuroscientists describe ruts in our brains, and they're the result of millions of sensory data firing their way through our gray matter. The result is a furrow. I never saw it, he said, but there was a sign appeared in an old oil field dirt road outside my hometown. Watch out for ruts, it said. Get caught in one and you'll be in it for miles. Ruts. If you touch a hot stove as a child, your brains will, for the remainder of your life, steer you away from touching a hot stove again. If you get burned in relationships, your thoughts will travel down the brain rut of defeatism. Not knowing what else to do, you retreat into your bedroom and you keep replaying the untruth. In my case, no one likes me. No one loves me. No one ever will. I was in a rut. And fourth grade Max did not know how to fight back. And maybe you don't either. If you don't retaliate, though, those untruths will create the F in UFOs, which is a false narrative. A narrative is a message that ceaselessly plays in your mind. It's the way you see yourself and what you say to yourself. You know, anybody who seems incurably irritable or cranky or melancholy, I'd bet a dollar to a donut that a negative, intrusive loop dominates their thoughts. I'm such a loser. I screwed up again. It's me against the world. The untruth has dredged a rut, and the rut has resulted in a false narrative. A false narrative had a strong hold on the life of a young lawyer from Illinois. He was so gloomy that his friends kept knives and razors out of his reach, and on some occasions they actually stayed with him all night just to protect him from himself. His false narrative led him to write, quote, "I am now the most miserable man living. If what I feel were equally distributed to the whole human family, there would not be one cheerful face on earth. And whether I shall ever be better, I cannot tell. I actually forebode I shall not. To remain as I am is impossible. I must die or be better, it appears to me." He lived life in a minor key. His sky was gray. His future was dim. His flame of hope fizzling fast. His name? Abraham Lincoln. He wrote these words in 1841. And a close friend said that Abraham, melancholy dripped from him as he walked. But something changed. Consider how different he sounded in 1863. Quote, "This year that is drawing toward the close has been filled with the blessings of fruitful fields and healthy skies." Yet the circumstances that surrounded Lincoln in 1863 were far worse than they were in 1841. The Republic was on the brink of collapse. Thousands of young men were fighting and dying in the Civil War. Lincoln had learned to manage his narrative, and he developed habits of the mind that enabled him to find gratitude during times of calamity. How? An answer is found in a remark he made to a friend, quote, "I've noticed that most people are about as happy as they make up their minds to be." And it seems that a lot of people have chosen to be less happy than they could be. Their problems begin with an untruth. The untruth spread like mold and become part of their identity, and since it was left uncontested, it morphed into a false narrative that defines the way they see themselves and what they say to themselves. And in time, the untruth has created a false narrative that results in an overreaction. Max shares, "A shadow came across a man's face recently when he learned my profession. A mutual friend introduced us. Bob, this is Max. He's my pastor." "Don't talk to me about religion," he blurted. Turns out that he, like many people, had an unpleasant experience with a clergyman. It had something to do with getting called out as a teenager for misbehaving in church. But the event left a mark. Bob extrapolated the pastor's action to include all ministers. An untruth entered his world. Pastors are unfair. And the untruth led to a false narrative. Religious leaders mean to harm, not help me. And by the time I met him, an overreaction was in full bloom. I'll never have anything to do with church. He based a life decision on one experience. And there were certainly other contributors. Perhaps his parents maligned the church. Perhaps he crossed trails with a huckster. Whatever the cause, the reaction was an overreaction. And to be sure, overreactions are understandable. If you bump against my bruised arm, I'll pull it back in a way that surprises you. If I trigger your unseen emotional wound, you might react in a manner disproportionate to my action. Overreactions have their reasons, and they also have their consequences because you can get trapped in a stronghold. Untruths lead to false narratives that prompt overreactions. UFOs. Are aliens messing with your mind? If so, you can relate to Rex the dog. Craig Groeschel told us about him in his excellent book, Winning the War in Your Mind. Rex the dog never leaves his owner's yard. He never runs after a cat or chases a car. It's not because he's old. It's not because he's sick. It's not because he likes cats or cars. Rex's inaction is due to an electric fence. The owners installed it to keep Rex from running away. Rex knows better than to leave the yard. He's tried before, and when he did, his collar encountered the invisible fence, and zap, it stung. He tried again. Zap, it stung again. In time, Rex learned his lesson, and he knows better. But here's what Rex does not know. The electric fence no longer has electricity. Parents in the neighborhood were worried that their kids might get shocked, and Rex's owners complied and deactivated. The fence is zapless. Still, it has been years since Rex left the yard. He's inside a prison that doesn't exist. And the same could be said about Max, the fourth grader. You know what he needed? You know what we all need? We need to put Paul's instructions to work. 2 Corinthians 10:5 Fight to capture every thought until it acknowledges the authority of Christ. And here's how it works. An uninvited thought of worry crosses and saunters through the living room of your mind. Freddy Fret plops himself down on your cerebral couch, spouts woes, kind of like a fire hydrant gushing water. I'll never get a promotion. Or the mark of my skin is melanoma, untreatable, incurable melanoma. Or my life will never know love. I'm confined to years of loneliness. The old you would have listened, nodded, agreed, moaned. You would have been hailed a mold of dread and trepidation until anxiety consumed you like a cloud. That's what the old you would have done. But the new you, the renewed you, the transformed by the renewing of your mind you, the picky thinking you, the you who identifies UFOs and marches them into the presence of Jesus. You confront worry at the front door of your brain. Hold on a second, you purveyor of pain and problems. Who invited you? I didn't see your name on my guest list for my thought party. Let me take you to see the boss. So you grab worry by the nape and march him into the presence of the Prince of Peace. Jesus, I have found this untruth snooping around my porch trying to get in. Is he allowed? And the answer is direct. Only if he bows down to my authority. And Freddy Fret grumbles, snarls, I'll never do that. Out with him, Jesus commands, and you, with the confidence of a burly barroom bouncer, toss anxiety out the door. That is the version of you that God wants to create. He gives you the power to cast down strongholds. Using Christ's weapons, we can pull them down, destroy the beachhead of the devil. Victim of your thoughts? Not you. Stuck in your head? Not you. Imprisoned by a powerless fence? No way you can tame your thoughts. But you've got to get serious. Eric and Megan did. They moved out of the moldy house, and healing began when they took action. What about you? UFOs. They're odd looking, look scary, but they don't belong in your brain. For God has given us a spirit of fear, not of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. Selah.